Next matter is disciplinary counsel versus Stanley Jackson Jr. Mr. Matthews.
Mr. Chief Justice, justices, may it please the court. Again, my name is Alvin Matthews, and I'm here on behalf of the respondent, Stanley Jackson, who's present here today. And at the outset, he would like for me to say on his behalf that he apologizes to the court for being here, for the circumstances that led to his conduct, and then in particular, that he is charged with not being straight with disciplinary counsel during the investigation and then also in the proceedings, and we'll certainly address these issues of veracity in our comments today. We're asking the court to essentially adopt the recommendation of the panel, the hearing panel that actually heard the case, as opposed to the recommended sanction of the board of a two-year suspension. The panel recommended 2 years with 1 year stay. They heard all the evidence, and it was a two-day hearing. And the full board, which reviewed what the panel heard in terms of evidence, recommends a two-year suspension, which we believe is quite harsh for this case. Our second reason for objecting is that this board focused on a single aggravating factor, that is the alleged lack of veracity of the respondent, as opposed to weighing all of the aggravating and mitigating factors of this case, which the standards on lawyer sanction urges this court and courts all around the country to do. With regard to our first point, the sanction, obviously this court hears all the disciplinary cases, reviews on the record all the disciplinary cases, and you see anything from the worst of conduct warranting a disbarment all the way to a technical violation that might warrant a public reprimand, and then you see everything that's in between. And so you see those range of sanctions. And with regard to discipline, it is well settled that the court should look at the facts of the case, number one, the harm to the clients or to the public, and then finally should weigh the aggravating and mitigating factors. And so all of that should be taken into consideration. And we believe that that's what the panel did here. The panel, which again, heard evidence over 2 days, saw all of the witnesses that testified. And there were witnesses that were presented on both of the client counts. There were two witnesses on the Robinson count, and there was a witness on the tool count, as well as the lawyers who were involved in the fee sharing. Everybody testified, and the respondent testified. And so the panel was able to see all of that, and they were able to measure the respondent, Mr. Jackson's testimony, against that of the other witnesses, and they saw that firsthand.
Mr. Matthews, in this case, one of the clients, that Mr. Robinson, young Jack, is that?
Yes.
He was carrying a weapon through the airport security.
Yes.
And the fee was $25,000 or $30,000?
The quoted fee was $30,000 and $25,000 was paid.
All right. And has any or all of that been reimbursed to Mr. Robinson in this case?
Where there's actually an agreement between Mr. Jackson and Mr. Robinson to pay that back, and unfortunately, Mr. Jackson is working on meeting that agreement, but has been unable to make payments thus far. But he certainly would like to do that.
Okay, but when was it that he collected the $25,000?
It was shortly after the engagement started. $5,000 was given, I think, close to the time of the arrest, and then additional funds were wired thereafter. So these funds were received within the first couple of days of the representation.
I see.
And at that point, Mr. Jackson did certain things on Mr. Robinson's behalf, which unfortunately for Mr. Jackson were not documented. He did not keep contemporaneous time records, apparently, and unfortunately presented a bill or some sort of itemized statement much later, and that is made a part of the record here. But, you know, Mr. Jackson is alleged to have made certain inconsistent statements with regard to what he did on behalf of Mr. Robinson, and we believe that that's because it's not documented.
Is the agreement to reimburse the funds part of the record before us?
I believe it is. It is, Your Honor, at least in terms of testimony.
$25,000 reimbursement.
I believe that's what's contemplated by the agreement. And again, Mr. Jackson has not made payments, but would like to. And we believe that a one-year suspension, as opposed to 2 years, would be in furtherance of that. That would be motivation to pay that back sooner rather than later, and might give some impetus to that happening.
So in 3 years, he's paid nothing, even though he's made an agreement.
Well, the agreement was made, I believe it would have been this year.
But he got the $25,000 3 years ago.
Right, prior to the hearing, Your Honor, he was contesting how much was owed back. That was disputed. But then before the hearing, stipulations were entered, and Mr. Jackson did agree that he charged a clearly excessive fee, and he's given no credit for that by the board, by the way. The board should weigh that mitigating factor that he's acknowledging some of the conduct. He admitted he charged a clearly excessive fee, and he also admitted that he failed to return an unearned fee. So he admitted to those two violations prior to the hearing. There were also other violations. He was charged, in our view, with too many violations in this case, and some of which were dismissed. And if you look at the stipulations, it lays out all the facts that the parties agree upon, all the facts that the parties do not agree upon, and then it cites all the rule violations that are alleged, and only two of them were proved with regard to the first count, and those were the ones that Mr. Jackson admitted. Okay. And then with
counsel, what weight do you give the fact that the respondent made so many inconsistent statements of a material fact, which I find to be extremely troubling, that each issue that was discussed here on which he gave statements, there's at least two and sometimes three or four different versions, different stories that he was telling. What are we to make of that?
Well, obviously, number one, the documentation issue, and I want to talk about that.
What documentation issue?
That there should have been, number one, an engagement letter on Robinson. Should have been an engagement letter. That would have set forth how the fee agreement should have worked, what he was going to do for Robinson, et cetera. He also should have kept contemporaneous time records, even though it was supposed to be a flat fee.
I'm talking about the regarding count three, the false statements in the disciplinary matter is
right.
What I'm concerned about.
And that's what I'm addressing, Your Honor. What I'm addressing is the false statements are alleged to have been made about count one and count two. With regard to Robinson, that transaction should have been documented. And if it had been documented, then what happened would have been apparent to everybody, including Mr. Jackson. Mr. Jackson would have been able to, that occurrence occurred in 2007. The tool matter occurred in 2004. So he's testifying about that about 5 or 6 years later. With regard to Robinson, he's testifying about that 3 years later with no records about his representation, no time records, no engagement letter.
So you're saying that had he been able to document on a hourly basis how he was earning his fee, he would not have given these contradictory statements because he would have had something to look back on.
That is true, Your Honor. And it also goes to he needed to be more careful I mean, at some point you have to take personal responsibility for the statements that you make, particularly under oath. And as a lawyer, he should have obviously been more careful when he met with disciplinary counsel and talked with them about this and when he testified at the hearing.
Well, so when he says that he went to the airport and convinced the FBI not to charge him and you know, he actually recounts going and having a discussion that never took place, that was just an error because he couldn't remember that he didn't do that?
Well, obviously, if he had a record that he went to the airport, then that would have been more helpful. He had no record about that particular
But he admitted later that he really didn't do that.
Well, his testimony was somewhat different, yes, Your Honor.
And then the activity with regards to the $2,500 settlement check and first saying I didn't sign it and then I did sign it and then I turned it all over to Attorney Butler and then maybe I didn't turn it over and maybe he only got $600. That was all just, I don't remember what I did, so I just made things up.
Well, again, Your Honor, that goes to documentation because he didn't have a settlement statement. If you have a settlement statement for a transaction, then obviously it's going to spell out what money went to whom.
But the first problem is signing that check without authority, isn't it?
Well, he had a power of attorney. There's a question as to whether that power of attorney should have related to that transaction, but he did have a power of attorney. But again, to the documentation issue, there was no fee-sharing agreement. That would have been helpful. Everybody would have known what everybody was supposed to receive if that had been in writing in terms of who was supposed to receive what. Secondly, no settlement statement. Thirdly, he cashed the check and then apparently gave out cash rather than issuing checks to people, which would have been helpful. If you look at the record, there's no paper on these issues. And so we have witnesses coming in saying different things, and then you have the panel and the board at the end construing it against the respondent, which is probably somewhat expected because we do have writing requirements in the state now for lawyers to document these things, preferably in writing.
We don't normally have lawyers filing lawsuits on behalf of clients and not letting the client know the suit is being filed.
And that was
settling the case and keeping the money? This is not what we're about here. We're here to protect the public from exactly this kind of conduct.
The court is here to protect the public, and that is the purpose of the system, to protect the public. And from the aggravating factor side, certainly you look at protection of the public with regard to certain conduct here. We're also here, those of us who work in the system, and certainly the court has jurisdiction to make the final say-so, to make sure that the system is fair to lawyers and to also to the public. And we would respectfully submit that in going so far, because Mr. Jackson is not saying that nothing should happen to him here. He actually recommended that a sanction occur at the hearing, a state suspension, and we're here arguing today that you should suspend his license for 1 year.
What would you think about a monitor for someone like this who doesn't follow an IOLTA account, doesn't prepare one, doesn't prepare a settlement statement, file suit without telling clients about them? I mean, this is a person that needs some training.
A monitor would be good. Keep in mind, with regard to the tool matter,
pardon me, please.
I said this person would benefit from a monitor. With regard to the tool matter,
yes.
The one that you're speaking of, Mr. Jackson was licensed to practice law in 2003. The tool matter, he began representing tool in 2004. Now, granted, all lawyers who practice 1 year don't make these mistakes, but lawyers who have good mentors certainly don't make these mistakes. And certainly that would have been helpful here. With regard to the other matter, the Robinson matter, licensed in 2003, that matter occurred in 2007. Not very much experience for this lawyer at that point. He can certainly benefit from some good mentoring.
We certainly paid a fee that was comparable to someone with much more experience, wasn't he?
That fee for that sort of case, this person was an entertainer. apparently was from out of state. Whether it should have been lower or not, I guess is subject to some question for his level of experience. And he certainly understands now that he should have paid a good part of it back.
Could you comment on the confidentiality factors here? It appears in Toole that Mr. Toole was not notified there was going to be another attorney involved, and your client spoke to that attorney without the authority of the client about the client's matters. And furthermore, on the Robinson case, it appears there was some concern about speaking with the media, and we have a statement here that your client did at least apparently talk to the media, what, for 19 hours? Is that what we see here? So I'm concerned about that, the protection of the client's confidences. You mentioned, you know, the number of charges here, and he was not charged with that particular violation. However, would you comment on that, please?
With regard to Toole, he was, I believe, charged with a breach of confidentiality, and that was not found in that particular case. What happened in Toole was that Mr. Toole was aware that Mr. Butler was involved in the case. In fact, at a certain point in the representation, he said he didn't want Mr. Butler to work for him anymore, and that's when Mr. Butler put a lien on the file. So he was aware of his representation. The problem was they didn't have the proper fee-sharing agreement under the...
Saying Mr. Toole authorized the work of Mr. Butler as
well.
He
did. He knew about it.
Before Mr. Butler was engaged, or did he find it along the route of the representation?
I'm not certain of the timing, Your Honor, to be honest.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews.
Thank you. We would urge, again, the court to impose the 2-year with 1-year stayed as opposed to the 2-year suspension. Thank you.
Thank you.